Live from EverBank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, here we go. Jaguars Today kicking off this morning. Brought to you every Monday by Wild West Guns and Gold. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We will open things up to you coming up shortly at 641-1010. If you want to react to yesterday's sixth loss of the season in eight games for the Jacksonville Jaguars, that's the way to do it. 641-1010 is also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Our fan feedback question today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. We went with glass half full, glass half empty on the Jags based on where they stand right now, what you've seen from them on the football field. You can tweet your responses to that at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler as well. The Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. You know, Jeff was talking about, will this catch up with Gus Bradley, Tony? I heard a caller on the fifth quarter with T-Wig and Hacker yesterday when we were leaving say, why isn't Gus Bradley on the hot seat? Why can't we put him on the hot seat? Well, ultimately, there's only one guy that can determine the hot seat. That's the owner. That's the guy who has hiring and firing power. And he has come out and said that he believes in the process. Whether you believe in it or not, you can say anything you want. You can, you know, you can march on EverBank and with picket signs and all that, expressing your discontent with the coaching staff. And I'm not saying it's unjustified, because coaching has to play a role in this. But the bottom line, I just think you're just getting yourself worked up. Let this thing play out over the next eight games. From that standpoint, I'm not saying you have to be happy with it or accept it and not critique it.
No.
But this idea that can't we create enough energy to create a hot seat right now? Well, Shad Khan has taken the hot seat option away, at least during the season this year. So to me, it seems like a pointless discussion. I get a lot of people want to vent about it. And I'm not saying, we can't critique the coaching. We certainly can.
No, you certainly can. It's fair, but it's kind of like yesterday during the game. I'm interacting with some fans on Twitter, and one fan in particular brings up, you know, man, they just can't get a pass rush, and he's just going on and on about it. I go, look, if you're waiting on this team to develop a pass rush in 2015, you might as well just go beat your head against the wall. It's not happening. It's not coming. They don't have the pieces in place to rush the opposing passer. They just don't with what they have on this roster right now. So stop waiting on it to show up in 2015. It's kind of the same thing with Gus Bradley. If the owner is going to come out, and he did the week of the London game, come out and say basically that Gus Bradley is safe for the rest of 2015. That's what he said. We're not having a discussion about changing coaches during the season here in Jacksonville. Then that's where it's at. That doesn't mean that there can't be fair criticisms made of
sure.
Gus Bradley and the decisions that he makes and this coaching staff makes throughout the season. Is he on the hot seat? He may be.
He may end up on the hot seat. He's
right.
Not at this moment.
You don't. Like, well, we don't know. Shad Khan, whatever he said to the public, that doesn't mean that necessarily represents how he feels right now after two more games. We don't know.
I'd be shocked, though, after making those comments,
I'm not talking about hot seat in 2015.
Okay,
I'm talking about January.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Could he be there then? Yes. But in November, it's a moot point. That's all I'm saying.
It's not going to change.
Right.
The next eight games, your head coach is going to be Gus Bradley.
And maybe beyond that.
Yeah, and I don't know what could happen in this season that would change that. If they started getting embarrassed over the course of the next couple weeks, maybe that changes
the
mindset.
It looked like they were quitting on it. They're not doing that.
I'm curious to see what's going to happen here in a couple weeks when they come home. If they lose to Baltimore, and they're 2-7... and they found a way to lose these two road games before they finally come back home on a Thursday night against the Tennessee Titans. After seeing what that crowd looked like, especially in the second half the last time they were home against Houston, what it's going to look like. And it's that kind of stuff that I think more than anything else is going to start getting the attention of Shad Khan. If people stop showing up to support and watch this team when they have home games, that more than anything else speaks to the owner. And I'm curious what it's going to look like if they lose again on Sunday when they're back here on a Thursday night.
Yeah, but that at the same time, you know, you're sitting there, and I know you're not advocating for that. You're just saying if that happens, let's see what follows from that. But, you know, you're a Jag fan. You may be upset or you may be disenchanted or whatever, but you also are a season ticket holder, perhaps, or you just want to go to games, and that's what you love to do. So,
sure.
You know, I'm not going to blame the fans if they show up.
No, not at all.
Or if they don't show up. That's their prerogative to do either one.
I think it's, and we've talked about this before, and it's the struggle that the Jaguars are going to have. It's they have a core fan base that is really strong in this city. And what the Bolt City Brigade and the Teal Street Hooligans and all these fan groups do, and the fans that show up here and have, through all this misery of the last 6, 7, 8 years, the fans that have stuck out through all that stuff are still going to be showing up. And I respect that. I respect that a ton. The problem for the Jags is the stadium isn't 35, 40,000. Right, and I think those fans are going to show up every week regardless. It doesn't matter what the product on the field is. They support and they love this team, and they think that that's part of their responsibility is to show up and support them. It's trying to convince that next 25, 30,000 people that it's worth it to show up. And the results on the field in the past 3 years under Gus Bradley aren't convincing anybody right now that it's worth it to show up to support this football team. Can they change that? I hope so over the course of the next 8 games.
And as we said, the question today, are you glass half full, glass half empty? I mean, you could certainly look at it from either perspective that you want to. If you want to say, hey, you know what, Blake Bortles, 381 yards passing, a couple more touchdowns. He is well on the way to smashing the single-season touchdown record for Jaguar quarterbacks. Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns are in uncharted territory as a duo of Jaguar wide receivers, and you've got other guys producing as well. The run defense was outstanding yesterday. 23 carries for 26 yards for Chris Ivory. There are certainly things that you could point to and say, hey, I like that, but at the same time, turnovers, inopportune.
Did you see that was an all-time low for Chris Ivory? No one has ever carried the ball 23 times for that little amount of yards in NFL history.
Is that right? No one has ever carried it that
ever.
You know, we had people criticizing the defense yesterday, which I thought was astounding.
It's unfair.
I mean, just astounding.
The positions that the turnovers put that defense in.
You got Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker out there. Those guys are not chopped liver. You shut down what you came to shut down. Chris Ivory scored a couple of touchdowns. One, because they didn't have a field goal kicker, and they were forced to go for it on fourth down. I mean, imagine that. You know, the fact that Folk got hurt actually worked into the Jets' favor on that one because it forced them to go for fourth and three, and they converted it and ended up getting 7 instead of a field goal attempt, which, you know, even if you assume it's good, that's a 4-point swing at that point. All right, we got to take our first time out of the show. Phone lines are open to you at 641-1010. Also, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll hear plenty from Gus Bradley after the game. Get your reaction as well. Glass half full, glass half empty. Share your thoughts with us today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
First down from the 30. 20 seconds to play. One timeout left.
Can't take a sack right here.
Two right, one left, slot left.
Green 80.
Now they're under center.
Green is up.
Straight drop, pump fake left, now looks back right, fires toward the end zone to the right side. That ball is caught for the touchdown. Allen Hurns from Blake Bortles for the score.
It was interesting yesterday, we were watching the game, as we always do in the studio, Tony, and we listened to the Jaguar Radio Network broadcast as we watch the game in the studio, so we don't listen to the TV broadcast, and you could definitely tell, it was weird, you know, we're like, all right, is it quiet? Because the radio broadcast is a little bit ahead of the TV broadcast.
Yeah.
And so we don't get to see it until about 7 seconds after we hear about it, and we're trying to figure out as the ball's in the air. Okay, are they cheering? Because if they're cheering, that's bad. And if they're not cheering, that's probably good. And, you know, so there you had it. Allen Hurns, the good, against 6 games in a row with a touchdown. Pretty amazing for Allen Hurns.
Really great stuff.
For two receivers over 120 yards for the first time in the same game in Jaguar history. These two are on pace to put up ridiculous numbers this year and merit Pro Bowl consideration, quite frankly. You know, I think Blake Bortles might merit some, but the interceptions are what's killing him. I mean, the positive numbers are strong. The yardage, the touchdowns, things like that. He's not winning enough games, and he's having critical turnovers.
It's anyone who wanted to call today and say that Blake Bortles is killing the Jaguars, you're right. And
he's
anyone
doing both.
And anyone who wanted to call today and say that Blake Bortles is the only reason this team has a chance to win on a week-to-week basis, you're right. And what that means is he needs to cut it out. I mean, just cut it out. Stop. The turnovers have got to stop. And it's pretty clear at this point, if this team's going to have a chance to win football games, it's going to be because Blake is playing clean games and giving them what he gives them. going downfield, because when he's doing both, they're losing. They're finding ways to lose these football games, and he's giving these guys a chance, but he's taking it away too with the mistakes that he's still making in these games. And I love the progress we're seeing from Blake Bortles, but he's got to cut it out at some point. The turnovers have got to stop if this team is going to have any chance to win these football games. That's pretty clear at this point.
Yeah, here's a texter. It's so funny. People hear what they want, but that's okay. That's what they've been doing ever since I've been in radio. Why do you guys keep sheltering Bortles? I don't believe we just did. You can't put this game on Marshall's fumble. Blake killed us three times yesterday, which is becoming a trend with him, yet you continue to heap on this statistical run he's on. That was, I think, the entirety of the tweet or the text on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Look, Jeff Prosser asked us, we didn't know what he was going to ask us, he asked us which single play was the biggest impactful play in the Jaguars' loss, and I agree with Tony, that single play.
Marshall.
That
yeah.
doesn't mean that Marshall's one interception is more, you know, grave than, or the one fumble is more grave than the three turnovers by Blake. And oh, by the way, don't forget the one where the ball fell out of his hand.
No, look, Blake made some incredible plays yesterday. He also killed him in that game yesterday. The reason the Marshall play is the one that I point to is because not only are they getting the ball back down five with a chance to go, but if he just catches that punt, he's got 15 yards in front of him.
Even if he doesn't.
Right. I mean, they're going to be at the 30, 35, maybe the 40-yard line when everything is said and done, starting that drive and with a chance to go down the field, which Blake has been really good at in late game, late half situations, to give them a chance to win that football game. If he just catches the punt, they're in that kind of spot.
One of the main Jaguar insiders, you didn't see him behind you, I'll tell you later who it was, because he didn't give me permission to pass that along. He was just pantomiming, if he catches that, he's going a long way, is what it seemed to indicate. And who do you put that on?
I agree.
Is that on Gus Bradley for not having Brian Walters out there? You could argue partially, because look, if it's that critical a moment and a turnover is really, even if he just catches it there and gets tackled on the spot, Tony, the Jags have a lot of momentum at that point in time.
They do.
And with 5 minutes left, I think they're going to go down and score. Now, maybe the Jets respond, but I think the Jags will go ahead and take the lead at that point in time if he hangs on to the punt. Maybe he gets a big return out of it. Who knows? Maybe if Brian Walters is in there, he catches it and gets a big return out of it. He's not the only guy, Nick Marshall, that is, you know, capable of doing that. He had done that twice in the game, on a kickoff return and a punt return. So
yeah.
That's what you're looking for. You're looking for a spark. Hey, let's pick up basically the equivalent of a couple of first downs with a nice punt return here. It was an important play. We're not hanging the loss on Nick Marshall.
They turned it over four times, and they did it three times outside of that and made, you know, mistakes. Out of the Parnell holding on the first and goal from the 10. I mean, there are plays
absolutely
that you can point to that cost them the game. As far as the coaching decision to have Nick Marshall out there, we briefly discussed this during one of the breaks yesterday on the postgame show. I don't mind teams that have, like, Antonio Brown fumbled a punt yesterday, and it's part of the reason that Oakland stayed in that game with Pittsburgh. It's because Antonio Brown fumbled a punt for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't mind teams having two guys that are designated punt returners for their team, and say it's Baltimore with Steve Smith. When they need a big one, they send Steve Smith out there. Or if it's Washington right now with DeSean Jackson healthy, when they need a big one, they send DeSean Jackson out there, and they have another guy who's just their punt returner on a regular basis. I don't know that a guy who played quarterback at Auburn last year as an undrafted free agent is the guy that I like being the, when we need a big one, we send this guy out there. I don't know that I like that part of it for where the Jaguars are right now trying to figure that out. And I know they're in that position because Rashad Greene is hurt, and he'd have been out there if he was healthy enough to be out there right now, and will be starting on Thursday night against the Titans. I don't like that, having to make that decision on your team, because I don't trust Nick Marshall back there yet, certainly.
No, certainly not. You can't at this point in time. And that's, you know, even if we would have liked to have seen Brian Walters out there, that's nitpicky. Catch the punt, regardless.
Catch it.
Catch the punt. That's your job. And look, I'd say the same thing about Blake. Do not throw the ball up for grabs with 50 seconds left in the game. I know the odds are against you, and that's why I say Marshall's was more critical. There was more time, better field position. I don't excuse what Blake did.
No.
But the odds of going down and scoring a touchdown from that end, not impossible, but they're a lot longer than if Marshall had simply secured the punt and you got five minutes left and you feel like you're going to maybe win that game.
And Blake's fumble was worse. It was way, way worse. when he just stood there and stood there and stood there and finally got hit and fumbled that ball. That was a way worse play by Blake, and he talked about it after the game, too.
All right, let's get to some callers here and get some reaction. We'll hear a little bit from Blake and from Gus Bradley coming up here about after the game. Andrew, up first today on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
What's up?
I just wanted to say, hey, I mean, this was an exciting game yesterday. We've made so much progress from last year. Last year, we just had Blake Bortles with just the turnovers, not all these touchdowns. And, yeah, I mean, a lot of the turnovers are on him, but, I mean, that first interception got popped up. The fumble was being hit from behind. He was trying to make something happen. And then the third, you know, it's prevent defense, 24 seconds left. Everyone knew he was passing. So I'm not trying to shelter him or make excuses, but Blake is what we're building this team around. And the big thing for me is, goal line inside the red zone. That's where we got to score. We're settling for too many field goals because that's the last thing a young offense can put together is inside the red zone. But as soon as we do that, man, I mean, I'm already on next year's train. But we've made so much progress. We would have killed if been in this game last year with our offense last year. So it's given us a reason to be excited here in Jacksonville.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the call, Andrew. Look, and that's your opinion, and I think it's a valid one. I also understand if others vehemently disagree.
You know?
No one's saying you got to feel a certain way as a fan, but I do understand there is a spectrum, a wide spectrum of how people feel. Some people look at it that way. Hey, that's good enough for me. We have improved. I can see the competitiveness of the football team. Other people are like, competitiveness, 2-6. That's the bottom line. The bottom line in the NFL, these are professional athletes, and I think it's a valid point of view to have as well. And, whatever end you're on or somewhere in the middle, you're a fan. You have the right to feel that way.
Yeah.
Let's get Justin up next here on 1010XL. Good morning, Justin.
Hey, good morning, guys, man. Love the way we fought yesterday, man. My big thing is I understand nothing's going to happen at this current moment, but at the end of the season, man, Gus Bradley has to go. He's just simply not putting our players in the right positions that they need to be in to make the plays. That's just like he wasted timeouts yesterday that I felt like he could have used better. Or he could have opened up the passing game better with Julius Thomas, knowing that you have Cromartie on one side and Revis on the other. I mean, it's just personnel decisions, man, and overall mental errors that the coaches are constantly making, man, and it's costing us games. I'll go out there with it.
All right, I will say the criticism of not getting the ball to Julius Thomas enough. The guy, Blake threw for 380 yesterday. He had two receivers go for over 120 yards. Does it really matter if Julius Thomas, it would have been better if Julius had 60 and Allen Robinson only had 60 and brought his total down? I mean, you know what I mean? They're producing in the passing game, Tony.
They are, so, but you expect more out of Julius Thomas than
yes,
you've gotten.
Yes, but would that, if you're going to force more balls to Julius Thomas, is that going to come at the expense of some of the other numbers?
Well,
and, you know, are you just going to be able to add to it?
I think the more relevant argument is Julius Thomas got 8 targets in that game yesterday. He needs to find a way to do more with 8 targets than he did.
I agree with that.
Like that's a little bit on Julius. I don't remember all 8 throws to Julius Thomas. I remember the one in the end zone, and I can remember the 3 catches that he had. But he really wasn't much of a factor in that game yesterday, and they brought him in to be a factor. Now, maybe he was dragging some coverage away that allowed, you know, the guys on the outside to still have a lot of one-on-one.
That's what Fred Taylor said in the postgame. I can't tell that from an initial viewing on TV.
And we'll talk to Logs about that tomorrow, I'm sure, and just where Julius Thomas is right now. The other thing is, talking about Gus Bradley specifically there, I think there has been an argument in the past that Gus Bradley has had bad challenges, has used timeouts at bad times, you know, the 12 men on the field, that kind of stuff. You've had those kind of issues in games. Yesterday, that wasn't the problem, right? Like, they didn't have to take a timeout because they had 12 men on the field on special teams during that football game yesterday. I thought the challenge that he made on the sideline was a great challenge. On the Brian Walters catch, that was the right call.
Sure, it was
to challenge that play, right? They just, for whatever reason, the official decided that wasn't a catch. He said he didn't maintain control of the ball to the ground. I still disagree with that, just watching the replays that I saw. But I thought Gus actually did a pretty solid job yesterday. I would have used the timeout like we talked about yesterday after first down before the end of the first half.
So would I. But it worked out.
It worked out. They got the touchdown at the end of the half anyway.
It worked out better that way because they left them no time. I would have taken the timeout because I don't think you're going to sit there and be afraid, oh, man, the Jets are all of a sudden, if we call a timeout, they're going to drive down
the
field.
Totally
with you. You can't can't play afraid.
Yeah, we both said it at the same time here in the room.
Save the time. It worked out for them, so you get a free pass on that one, as far as I'm concerned.
And you can make an argument either way as to whether you do the onside kick or not. I like doing the onside kick because it gives you two opportunities to get the ball there.
I kind of like kicking it deep in that circumstance. We talked about it.
Yeah.
But not so much that I'm going to say that's the reason why they lost the football game. You still have to stop them. They stopped them, but then you've got to do something with the ball. Who's to say that Blake doesn't throw that pick from midfield rather than from his own end? Maybe he feels a little bit more pressure because he is down in his own end. But, you know, prevent defense, as somebody mentioned, is not an excuse for throwing that interception.
No.
You don't make that throw.
There were four defenders there.
You don't make that throw on first down, Tony.
No.
For sure. They were right. There were four defenders and kind of one and a half receivers. He was throwing to one particular guy. He was double covered, almost triple covered. Was it Hearns?
Yeah.
On the play. And the ball had no chance. Had nothing on it. He knows. I'm sure he knew as soon as he threw it. Let's get one more in before we break here. Let's see who we've got next here. Let's go to Greg on 1010XL. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I wanted to start my comment off by with a quick question. So out of the last 2 years, out of the quarterbacks that have been drafted this year in the past draft, out of the ones that played significant time, you know, it's new, like Johnny Manziel and Garoppolo, out of the first round quarterbacks, who do you guys think has been the best?
Probably Derek Carr is probably playing the best right now.
Okay, I mean, and who do you guys think has been the worst?
Depends on what you're gauging it on. You could argue Bortles because of the turnovers. It's hard to argue Bridgewater because of the record, but Bridgewater's numbers are not impressive whatsoever to me.
Honestly, I think all five have been pretty good. That's my honest assessment, is all five are pretty good.
Okay, here's my thing. We gotta look at ourselves and see, we know what kind of franchise, what kind of team we want to be. Do we want to be the Carolina Panthers with Cam Newton not putting up great numbers and winning, or Minnesota Vikings with Teddy Bridgewater not putting up great numbers and winning? Or do we want to be Detroit with, you know, putting up 5,000 yards passing?
Why are those the only options?
Why
are those the only options, Greg?
I mean, because sometimes you have to look in the mirror and see what you have, you know. And with Blake, you know, when the game came, I just expected. I say, well, you know, it's press time. Blake is going to make a big mistake right here. It's going to be a turnover, and then the fumble happened, and then later on with the pick. And then when we got down, I already knew. I say, he's going to go to gunning. You know what I'm saying? And we came right back. It's the same story every week. Same old Blake. The same thing I see. And, I mean, he has a lot of talent, and, you know, I see the upside in him. But sometimes we got to start holding him accountable for things that's going on. And, you know,
explain to me how are we not holding him accountable? What should we be doing? Should we be bringing him in and giving him 50 lashes or what? What exactly define holding him accountable?
This is my thing. Okay, when Andrew Luck, everybody praises Andrew Luck.
Stop talking about other quarterbacks. Define holding Blake Bortles accountable. What would you have us do to hold him accountable?
Well, first of all, we can't be so high on him all the time, because after every game, you know, all the reviews are, oh, I would love to play with Blake. He's a great quarterback. He keeps fighting and keeps gunning. But why are we getting in his position? Because you're putting us in a bad position. As a quarterback, you have to grow up. And to answer my question, Blake has been the worst out of all the quarterbacks. And I don't know how you guys
in your opinion, all right, Greg, enough. You don't think Blake Bortles any good? I got it. We got it, and that's fine. That's your prerogative. I'm sorry. Our job isn't here to reflect any one person's point of view and to make you feel validated in your point of view. Our job is to give our own point of view. And my point of view is Blake does a lot of good things, and he does some very bad things as well. And if recognizing the fact that he does both you think is taking it easy on him, well, then you're going to have a problem with me, because I'm trying to be objective in my analysis of Blake Bortles, okay? He threw for 380. If Chad Henne's quarterback in the team yesterday, Tony, are they in that game?
No.
Right? I mean, are they not in the game because of Blake Bortles? Yes, he took it away from them as well with those turnovers.
Yeah.
Both, like you said, he was the reason they lost and the reason they had a chance to win. He was both things.
He's got to stop the other.
He does.
He's just got to stop killing them, because he gives them a chance every week, and he needs to stop being the guy that takes away their opportunity to win these football games. There's no doubt about it.
I'm with you on that. And, Greg, if you want to continue to point to other quarterbacks, and that's fine. You can do whatever you like, as far as I'm concerned with that. You hear what you want, and I'm convinced of that, that there's a very narrow band of people that are really going to like any of these shows on Monday, because unless you say exactly the way that person sees it, they think you're crazy. So I'm just going to keep saying it the way I see it, and if you don't like it, you know where the dial is, honestly.
Yeah. 6-4-1 Derek Carr threw an interception in the end zone that killed the Raiders in that game yesterday. Beat their best chance, gave them a chance to win it
along the way.
How it works.
It happens with young and older quarterbacks.
Yes, Aaron Rodgers threw two picks yesterday that buried Green Bay, it looked like. He's also the reason they had a massive comeback in that game against Carolina. That's kind of the nature of the position in the league, and the guys who are really, really good are the guys who don't kill their team very often.
Peyton Manning had a big interception last night as well. I mean, look, I get it. He's not winning them games this year, but whatever. Whatever the rest of the quarterbacks are doing is what they're doing. Let's take a break. 6-4-1-10-10. More of your calls coming up on the other side of Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's hard for me to say without looking at it. I mean, look, we have two over 100-yard receivers, you know, in Hearns and Robinson, and did some good things. But still, we got down that red zone area, and, you know, so whether it was a holding call or a sack or a fumble or, you know. So there's some things I think we'll look at and say he did some things well, and then some critical, you know, errors, and trying to make some things happen. So, you know, again, I'm sure he did some good things, and we'll look at the film to evaluate the whole process.
That's Gus Bradley after the game, asked how he felt Blake Bortles played overall. Amazing, Tony. Possible to have some good and some bad. The same performance. And to be able to actually point that out and say, you know what, there was some really good here. Well, is that coddling him? No, because there was some really bad here, and that needs correcting. Is that bashing him? No, I mean, no, it's pointing out the facts. Okay, there's a lot of good, there's been a lot of bad. There's a lot of both, and it's magnified when you're 2-6.
Yeah.
Right? If he goes down, if let's say Pozlowski falls on the fumble, okay, and they go from the 50-yard line, they go and score a touchdown with 10 seconds left, and they win the game, okay? You care about the earlier fumble? You care about the earlier interception? Do you really?
They'd be footnotes
that you overcame.
It'd be like we come in today and it'd be like, he really needs to cut that out.
It's right. Like, but hey, it's nice that he pulled out a game in the final minute.
He found a way. This is two in a row.
Now he
found
didn't do
a way.
That. So we're playing the hypothetical game. So, but, you know, it's not all or
it
nothing.
It felt like if Marshall would have caught that punt, that there was a realistic chance that was going to happen.
I felt like they would have at that point.
I think that's, like, more than anything, that's the source of frustration for Jags fans right now, is that they've not only been competitive in a bunch of games this year, and they have been. In 7 of the 8 games they played, they've been competitive, and if that counted, they'd be 7-1. But it doesn't. They're 2-6. But there's been 2 or 3 games where it clearly looked like you were better that day than the team you were playing.
I thought one of them was yesterday,
right.
That's for sure.
You were better than Indianapolis, right? You were probably better than Tampa Bay if you just don't turn the ball over again in that football game. And I thought they were better than the Jets in that football game yesterday, and they still found ways to lose those 3 games. And that, more than anything, I think, just elevates the frustration level of a fan base, watching this team continue to find ways to kill itself instead of get killed by an opponent.
All right, let's bang out some phone calls here. Glenn in Yulee is up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Doing great. Hey, to answer your question, if you can't see the glass is half full, you're not looking at the same glass. Real quick, I had an interaction with Shad Khan way before anybody in Jacksonville ever heard of him in Petersburg, Indiana. I was a district manager for a textile rental company, had to go visit one of my clients, and walking down the middle of this big, giant, dusty plant was Shad Khan with about 10 people with him, dressed to the hilt in 3-piece suits, talking to anyone who would let him talk to him. And when you walk by, you obviously recognize him because of the bushy hair and the mustache and so forth. I asked my liaison there, I'm like, who is that guy? Oh, he's the owner of our company. And I kind of had to, I guess, you know, obviously Middle Eastern descent in the middle of Petersburg, Indiana, kind of out of place. And she said, whatever you're thinking, you're dead wrong. He really cares about everyone here. The name of that plant was MasterGuard. They built bumpers for Ford Motor Cars. Think about what a bumper does. It protects the investment. His nature. He's going to protect the Jaguars and make the best decision for the team. Now, when he hired Dave Caldwell and Bradley, there was nobody else out there. Guess what? There still isn't. If you would select Bradley go, he'd go somewhere else and be a coach somewhere else and probably be the best hire that year. Same thing with Dave Caldwell. It's a 5-year plan, guys. Calm down and give him 5 years.
Well, 5 years. Who ever said it was a 5-year plan? I will take.
No one's ever put a clock on it.
Exception to that, right? Yeah. No one's ever said it's a 5-year plan. And if you came in and said, "Hey, Jag fans, be patient. 5 years from now, we hope this whole thing comes together." I think that'd be a tough sell. I'm not buying that you get a 5-year turnaround in the National Football League. And look, is it a 5-year plan in Fulham? It's a 5-manager-a-year plan in Fulham. He fires those guys left and right, Tony. So, I don't think you can extrapolate because he's a bumper guy and bumpers protect cars. I'm not quite sure where the parallel goes with any of that.
I think it's incorrect to say it's a 5-year plan when your coach before the season starts says the answers are in the building.
It's built.
And the GM, Dave Caldwell, said basically from the day he got here that he feels like when people were asking, why haven't you added that franchise running back yet, when he is saying, we feel like that's probably the last piece you add to a puzzle that you feel like is pretty much complete. Well, they went after DeMarco Murray, and they drafted TJ Yeldon. So if he was telling the truth about running back being one of the last pieces you add to a puzzle, then they feel like they thought coming into 2015, it's here. Right, this team is ready to start competing
and
winning
football
games. Doesn't
mean ready to compete for the Super Bowl.
No,
but ready to compete on a week in, week out basis and win.
Be
their
better
share.
Than 2-6.
That's the thing. How do you go from competing? Because they're competing, Tony. They're competing in 7 out of 8 games
finish.
This year. You got to win, right? You got to take it from just competing's not good enough in the NFL. We're not giving you a participation trophy.
They chose to go this young, and they're getting a picture, I think, of what it's like to go this young with a team that may be ready to compete. They may be at a skill level where they can compete with pretty much everybody they're going to play, but they're not mature enough to find ways to win these football games, and now it's dealing with that struggle. And again, it may or may not be the right way to build a football team. We don't know.
All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Samuel on the South Side coming up next. Hi, Samuel.
How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to make a comment. I understand some of the Jaguar fans' pessimism, but I was so proud of the team yesterday because for one time in my whole time that I really felt like these guys are going to pull this out in the fourth round. And I've been feeling that way for the last 4 to 5 weeks. And I know we are on the right track. I think we just have to have just a slight bit more patience. I for one, was very critical, but I'm proud of the improvement that we are. We are a young team. So let's see if we can forge ahead.
All right. Thank you, Samuel. Appreciate it.
Look, I'll say this.
Sean Conn would like another 100,000 just like you.
Most teams that turn the ball over 4 times against the Jets and don't get one against that defense are going to get crushed.
Going to get beat down.
Yeah, they're going to get crushed. And offensively, they were good enough in that ball game yesterday to give them a chance. And I don't think that's something that you could say for the past 2 years. This year you can.
And defensively they were good enough too, because you never let Chris Ivory get going.
It's just cut out the mistakes that you're self-inflicted wounds.
I hate the we beat ourselves thing. You know what I mean? I see Frank Gore after the game yesterday saying, oh, we know, we just beat ourselves. We just need to finish games. Well, your opponents might have something to do with it as well. You know, so I do hate that, but yesterday really felt like a game in which they did more harm to themselves than the Jets were able to do to them.
The Jets didn't do anything to make Marshall fumble that punt. You know, the Jets didn't do anything to make Blake Bortles hold on to that ball for an interminable amount of time.
Or just throw that last one up
for
grabs.
They didn't do that, right? Like, the first interception, okay, it's a third down, you're trying to squeeze it into a guy that you got one-on-one, Revis makes a play. That happens.
Right.
Right? Like, I wish you weren't throwing at Darrell Revis, but that kind of thing happens in a football game. I'm almost okay with that kind of play happening. It's the other three that you're just like, what are you doing?
Well, you know, it's not only them, Tony. He put one in Revis' chest that he dropped.
Yeah, at the end of the half.
Right. That was a big potential play right there. And then he drops one, just drops it at the goal line. Now he got back on it and was able to save that. And what again, the defense, as the Jags punt out of their own end zone, and the return comes inside the 40 with the benefit of, what do they have, a delay? Or they had a 5-yard penalty mix in there somewhere. But the defense gave up nothing.
I think it was a couple false starts.
When a team starts a drive on your 37-ish, I think they were, and they punt, that's a hell of a win for the defense right there. So they did have their moments, to be sure. Look, I think there's a segment out there that feels like when you point out the moments and the good things, you're coddling, you're doing all this, whatever. You know what? That segment I can't I don't have anything for you because I'm good. We're going to point out both. We're going to point out the good and the bad. And if you don't hear that, then you're selectively listening, I think, at this point. 641-1010. More of your calls coming up. We've got this date in football history, the Honda driver on the NFL. John Osier is going to join us. We'll hear from Gus and Blake coming up as well. I got a lot to do. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history. Brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. November 9th, 1997. Denver cornerback Darian Gordon ties an NFL record by returning two punts for touchdowns in the same quarter.
Whoa.
A feat previously accomplished just twice in NFL history. Don't ask me by whom. I don't know. His scoring returns, though, Gordon's, were of 82 and 75 yards, and they came in the first quarter, giving Denver a 14-0 lead en route to a 34-0 defeat of the Carolina Panthers. Famous birthdays for this date. Owen Daniels, he caught a touchdown yesterday for Peyton Manning. Wasn't enough as the Denver Broncos fell to Indy. That's another one that got you yesterday. He turns 33 years old today. Former Jaguar great, Derek Harvey. How old is Derek Harvey, Tony?
28.
29, and he hasn't played in the NFL in 4 years. And he's still only 29 years old.
He's got an awesome karate video.
Catastrophic bust and a great YouTube purveyor of the martial arts. And born in the state in 1989 as Tony pantomimes a little one of those nunchucks, right?
Yeah, it was so awesome.
Nunchucks. Kyle Rudolph turns 26 years old today, the Minnesota Viking tight end. This date in football brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located here conveniently on Gate Parkway. If you're in the market for a family dentist, if you need cosmetic work done, maybe you've heard about the Somnomed Custom Fit Stop Snoring Snore Guard. Why wouldn't you try that? If you've got a snoring issue, that means everyone in your family has a snoring issue because they're dealing with you. Call 620-9225 for Dr. McCall or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Just when it looked like Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger was finding his football legs again, he gets hurt. After having his foot stuck in the ground at an odd angle during a tackle yesterday, Roethlisberger is expected to miss a week or two with a foot sprain. Before leaving the game yesterday, Big Ben had thrown for 334 yards and two touchdowns against Oakland. Denver Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib could be facing league discipline after a personal foul penalty towards the end of the Broncos' first loss of the season yesterday when he appeared to purposefully poke Indianapolis Colts tight end Dwayne Allen in the eye. Talib said after the game that the poke was an accident. Quote, "From my angle, I see Allen headbutt Von Miller a little bit. I went over to poke his head, and I think my hand slipped and hit his face. He acted like he got an 18-passenger car wreck. I guess that's what type of guy he is."
Yeah, Aqib, you're the type of guy that goes to, quote, poke someone's head
right
and gouges their eye. But, and this is not the first time Aqib Talib.
So he was going to put his fingers on the side of his
helmet to poke him, Tony, to say, hey, think, buddy, think.
So did you get that little dull thud inside the helmet?
I mean, honestly, Aqib Talib.
You poked the guy in the eye.
But you gouged his eye. You went full pro wrestling.
You're a bad dude, and you poked him in the eye.
Right. And speaking of bad dudes, even you, the Philly hater. Were you
a
little bit happy last night? I don't know. Yeah, you get out a microphone that's turned on there, John Osher, if you're going to crack wise from the peanut gallery.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Finger, thumb slip, something slipped. Maybe his eye slipped in the path of my digit. But were you at least a little bit satisfied that aren't you... inwardly smiling a little bit every time Greg Hardy loses.
Oh my gosh, that guy.
Right? I mean so just, even a Philly hater like yourself couldn't have been too upset.
I don't think there's ever been anybody actively playing in the league that is easier to pull against than Greg Hardy.
Right? I mean, because I don't believe he has an ounce of remorse
in
his body. He put out that lukewarm statement of regret.
It was crazy. All that the pictures came out on Friday after we went off the air. And, you know, I had people asking me, you know, what does that mean for, like, anybody's opinion of Hardy? I was like, how could this possibly change your opinion of Greg Hardy? Like,
you already knew he was a bad guy.
It was as low as it could possibly be. And my opinion of the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones for signing the guy were as low as they could possibly be. And I can't imagine. I know these guys are professionals in these NFL locker rooms, but having to show up to work with that guy in my locker room every day would be really difficult, especially with him continuing the rap videos and the lack of remorse and the tweet on Saturday after the pictures come out, like everything he does, the way he handles himself on the field, it would be driving me crazy if I was another teammate of his in that locker room right now. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, and for Jerry Jones to come out and suggest that in the, was it a USA Today interview, that he maybe wasn't convicted because he didn't do it. Is the ultimate in head burying in the sand denial, but whatever. That's their issue.
You signed him because he can rush the passer and you had nobody else that could do it.
I'll just say this to the Jag fans, and I told them all along. They said, oh, we need to be in on Greg Hardy. No, you don't. You don't need to stoop that low to win football games. You really don't need to go that low. And I'm glad this organization did not sign Greg Hardy. I don't care if he has 50 sacks this year. Honest to goodness, I can't support that guy. So anyway, we can support Johnny O because he is here and he is a good man. How are you?
I got a question last week. Did I think Greg Hardy should be banned? I don't think he should be banned, but it's an awfully tough pill to swallow. If your team signs him,
right?
You follow
it, right. It should be everyone's individual decision, and
right.
let your moral compass dictate. And
I'd be fine if he was blackballed. I don't need him to be banned. I just 32 owners say nope.
You don't have to sign the guy just because he's good. No, you may find him reprehensible.
Cowboys had a right to do what they did,
correct?
Because he's a free man with a right to earn a living, but.
Doesn't make them right.
And in this one, the NFL, I'm not saying the NFL is perfect in this whole Greg Hardy scenario, but they did try to suspend him for 10 games this year. It's not their fault that they didn't have the authority to do that, and it got knocked down to 4. It's not like they said, well, let's only give him 4. The arbitrator, by the way, is not judging it on the merits of the case. He's judging it on what they're legally able to punish him with.
At some point,
there's a limit.
The legal system is a legal system, and it gives teams the right to sign him. But at some point, a team has a right to say, "I'm not really interested."
Right. I don't want to sign him. Right. Such as Ray Rice is effectively, and part of the fact he's a running back whose skills were declining, or at least that perception was.
Well, I think it's absolutely. If Ray Rice was a pass rusher who could rush the pass, you know,
if Ray Rice was Todd Gurley's age and was performing like Todd Gurley, it'd be a different story, right?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
No, I don't think there's any question. If you can play and make plays, you've got to do an awful lot not to be in the league.
All right, let's get to the Jags. They certainly made some plays. And John, you know, I this is my own issue, my own frustration.
Oh, you've got some issues.
Well, I do have a lot of issues, but you know, and I shouldn't let it bother me. But I try to give my honest appraisal of what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't try to be a company man. I don't try to gratuitously bash, and I'm not one of these guys that when I go over the top, it's because I'm really feel that way. I don't theatrically go over the top just for effect. I have enough anger issues in my life that I erupt on a spontaneous basis anyway. But when you're evaluating Blake Bortles, you can't. I mean, I think there's a segment that just want to say this guy's killing us. How are you coddling him? Well, we're not. But is it coddling to reflect that they probably wouldn't have been in position to have a chance late in the game if he's not throwing for 380 yards and a couple of touchdowns? He's making great plays on the one hand. He's making devastatingly stupid plays on the other hand.
There's no question. He has to get better and eliminate. That, you know, and to me, the big one, obviously, was, you know, taking the hit and giving up the fumble.
Yeah.
So there's no question, you'd be a fool to say that he doesn't have to get better in that area, and he doesn't have to get better in a lot of areas. At the same time, is your play, is your suggestion to say, let's draft another quarterback, start over? I mean, he has improved so much since last year. This is not something that automatically happens overnight. And I think the thing that you have to be careful of with Bortles, he was the first one to say it yesterday, had to either run quicker or get rid of the ball in that situation. At the same time, you don't want to take the instinct away from him that he had on that play to continue to buy time and look down the field. Because that's the same thing they gave you the touchdown to Allen Hurns the week before. A little different situation.
But I understand.
Keeping the eyes downfield, that's what eventually is going to make him very, very good, is that instinct, hey, I'm not going to get it done running. I'm going to look downfield. That's what the great ones do. Look, I'm not saying he's going to turn out this, but the things that he's doing this year are very real growing pains to me. It's not lack of ability. It's not seeing that he can't do it. Do you like Cam Newton right now?
This year, for the most part,
fifth year, right?
Yeah.
He's had a lot of.
Of course, Cam came in setting records, right? Through for 4,000. I don't think he's a great comparison. He came in over 4,000 passing yards.
He also had a few years where there were a lot of things you'd watch him and go, oh my goodness. Point being, it takes a long time to smooth out all the rough edges.
It can. Not always. Yeah. I mean, you know, we were talking about quick turnarounds. People were tweeting in and texting in, and typically I don't think it happens overnight, and that's what they were expressing, that this is a process. But, you know, Joe Flacco took a 4-win team to 12 wins in his first year.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Ryan took a 4-win.
Much better team at that point, though.
That had won 4 games prior to him getting there. So how much better were they? They were a 4-win team. I mean, that's the facts of the matter.
Right.
Matt Ryan came to a 4-win team and put him, I think, 12 wins in his first year. Double digits, for sure, in his first year. So sometimes it does happen quickly. I'm not saying that's the norm, but, you know, there are all kinds of areas on the spectrum. I think Blake has certainly progressed this year.
Right.
But at the same time, I think it's fair to point out that, man, just, you know, make better decisions in some of these key situations. And I understand what you're saying about you want a guy to stand in the pocket and deliver. But every quarterback will tell you there reaches a point in time when when sometimes too long is too long, and you know
no question.
You got to get rid of the football.
No question. And I thought, you know, I heard you guys talking about, you know, keep playing the game. What I really thought, much more so than the Nick Marshall fumble, which I'm not excusing the Nick Marshall fumble, I thought the sequence, the Bortles fumble, you're on the 3 before the penalty. Not getting points there, I thought, was much bigger than the Marshall fumble.
And potentially. To me, the way I looked at it was...
Because you're point blank. All of a sudden, you had momentum. Once you didn't score there, Jets are a good defense. When they were getting that punt, I wondered, can they go the length of the field?
See, I didn't feel that way at all. I felt like they had some momentum there offensively. And I thought when they got that stop with 5 minutes left, whether he breaks off a big return or not, I felt like, wow, this is a team that's coming on and they're going to win this football game. And the reason I felt that was the bigger one, because it occurred as late as it did, you still had an opportunity to overcome the previous ones.
Yep.
And, you know, as it turned out, you had one last shot, but I'm not saying it was.
Yeah, I'm not trying to minimize the Marshall fumble, obviously.
Right. I mean, they're all important.
Yeah.
They're all important. And that's not to say Nick Marshall's the go to the game. That was my reaction to what one individual play was the most significant.
Yeah.
It wasn't the only play, because even if he fumbles that, if they don't have the other turnovers, maybe they win comfortably, right? So no one's trying to say Nick Marshall is the sole reason they lost the football game, but it was certainly a significant turning point.
And again, it's so tough with Bortles, as he said. I'm not trying to excuse even the last pick. Somebody emailed me this morning and said, oh, you're excusing the last pick because it was in desperation time. No, he threw back across his body, and it wasn't a good throw. You know, I thought at that point it was going to be really a reach to drive the length of the field and score a touchdown in 50 seconds. And I thought that was really a case where an interception would have happened to a lot of quarterbacks in that situation. I didn't focus on that as much in my writing this morning as I did the other thing.
Would you have kicked it deep there, or did you like the onside? To me, this is like the game decider, but I probably would have kicked it deep.
I probably would have, because... And I'm drawing a blank. How many timeouts do they have?
One.
Jackson won, but it was 2:15.
On the right side of the 2-minute
warning.
Correct.
So you're going to get, you're going to stop him. You're going to get a timeout on first down at the 2-minute warning.
Probably
and
about
then
a
you
minute.
Got a second one. And the same way it played out at midfield. All right.
Yeah.
You have about the same amount of time.
I probably would have kicked it deep, because I'm just a believer that you usually in that situation, if you've got one timeout and the 2-minute warning, you have more time than it feels like you have.
You have to get a stop anyway. One first down wins it for the Chiefs, regardless of what point of the field you're at. So to me,
at that point, I guess as I look at it, I have more of a problem with not kicking it deep than I do when he took the timeout. I didn't have a big problem with when he took the timeout after the 2-minute warning or before.
I didn't. That was
I think it's going to run down to the two, And I'm not thinking clearly on it because
it did. It ran down to the two. You could have taken it and saved a few seconds on the other side of the 2 minute warning. But you also open up the possibility by not using it if for some reason the Jets surprise you and throw the football.
Right.
Okay. And then they have an incomplete pass and that takes you to the 2 minute warning.
Right.
Right. It opens up the possibility of throwing this way. It almost forces them to run the ball.
I agree more with what, you know, and it's funny. I haven't thought a lot about clock management in a little while because they haven't had that many clock management issues because they've been down in so many games. But I agree with you on that. At that point, your timeouts on either side, I'd rather play with the slight possibility you get the incomplete pass. Not kicking away. I probably would have kicked away.
Yeah, but I mean, again, that to me wasn't the year because Tony and I both said at the time it happened, we would have called a timeout in the first half after first down. We're like, come on, you're wasting all this time.
That was the one where I was in the press box, and it was funny. Ryan O'Halloran was three seats away saying, why are you using the timeout? Why are you using the timeout? And it's just different philosophies. And I was saying, as soon as the first time, call timeout immediately because that's your time.
I would have said the same thing.
Especially with a team that is a running team.
And with a team that hasn't shown any really ability to drive it down the length of the field on you in the entire half. So what,
and I got asked a lot of questions about the two-minute warning today. And again, I thought the end of the first half was more on that first play, hey, call timeout.
That was more, but it worked out. So and it worked out perfectly the way you would hope it would work out because they got the stop and they left the Jets no time after that. So that, you know, score one for Gus Bradley on that because we questioned it when it was happening, but it turned out to be the play that worked. You know, whether it's the right play or not, it worked out for them.
And I guess they,
All right, let's hold that thought. We're up against a break here. John Osher's going to stick around. We'll take some of your calls on the other side. We'll hear a little bit from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles coming up as well. A Wild West Guns and Gold Money continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
You know, whenever you have talented guys, I mean, the receivers are doing pretty good. You like to get everybody more touches, but ultimately we want that W. And I think everybody understands their role. But, yeah, I mean, he's a guy that you always look to get more involved.
That's talking about Julius Thomas. It was asked if he's happy with how involved Julius Thomas is. I agree. Look, the W, I don't care if it comes from Julius Thomas. I don't care if it comes from somewhere else. The W is the most important thing. They didn't get the W, however. And I don't know the answer to all these questions that I'm going to pose to you, and I don't expect you to necessarily know all of them. But to me, as part of it is like, hey, you know, 380 in the air, whether it comes from the tight end or it comes from there. Fred Taylor said in the postgame he thought the presence of Julius Thomas is one of the reasons why we're continuing to see these outside guys flourish. Maybe, maybe not. Julius didn't look great yesterday. Second consecutive week looked kind of slow. You know, people are questioning, is he out of shape? Right now had a big drop with one, even if I don't know if he's banged up or what, but even if he is, one that you expect him to catch 99 times out of 100. Right. So what's going on with Julius,
you know,
I guess?
I sat there last night as I was doing my What We Learned and the ozone stuff, and that question kept popping up, and I kept wishing I had a better answer. Is it the abdomen? You know, he's been listed on the injury report the last couple of weeks. He worked full. Is that somehow causing him, and I'm twisting. It's not very good radio. You can't see me twisting.
I can see you twisting.
So, but is that causing him to be a little sluggish, a little tentative, which it clearly looked like at times that was the case? I would think that's a little bit of it. I think there's still a little bit of a chemistry issue. I don't think it's coincidental that there is such a good rapport with Hearns and Robinson and Bortles right now in that they have been there every week.
Yeah.
And I think Blake has a real comfort with those guys. It's clear as a comfort and a trust that when he's under a rush and he's got to make a decision to look fast, that's clearly who he's going to and not to Julius yet.
And that's understandable.
Sure. And I think that's an element of it. You know, we talked during the break. I'll be curious to see what Gus says today. Julius came out of the game on some pretty key situations in the fourth quarter. I guess it was the fourth quarter. They were coming back this way. So fourth quarter. I'm thinking about what I saw through my binoculars.
Sure.
It stands to reason that you leave Mercedes in there in that situation because he's a better blocker.
And
they were all over.
Worked.
Right. So you could see a scenario. They're standing on the sidelines, and Olsen and my brother are trying to communicate. And it's like, we got to do something to keep these guys upright, meaning the quarterback. So, yeah, let's keep Mercedes in. Let's max protect. Let's do something. I'm assuming that was part of it, because otherwise it would be very strange not to have Julius in the game in that late game situation.
All right.
So I wish I had a better answer.
No,
it's clearly an issue because right now you've got Hearns, Robinson, and Yeldon, who I think are all playing, who are all giving them something as skill position guys, and you really need a fourth to take pressure off the other guys, and they need Julius Thomas to be that guy.
TJ looked like he missed some blitz pickups yesterday.
I think, you know, I got that question quite a bit. It seemed to me in the binoculars that he did a little bit. I think overall he's better at blitz pickup than they anticipated him being coming out as a rookie. I don't think it would be unusual if in this sort of hailstorm that the blitz was yesterday, if he missed a couple. You know, that wasn't considered his strength coming out. Probably is an area he still needs to improve, but they like him overall in that, and he's better than they thought. But it did seem like he missed a couple.
All right, let's go to the phone, 641-1010, if you'd like to get on. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osier here with you on Jaguars Today. Let's go to Shelton on the south side of Jacksonville. Hi, Shelton, how are you?
Hey, guys, how we doing?
Good, thanks.
First of all, y'all do a great job. I don't care what other callers say.
That's right. They may be right. You may be wrong. I don't know. That's still open for discussion. What can we do for you?
Two quick comments, man. I thought the offensive line, the first half of the game played not okay. But I'm kind of encouraged, man, because I heard Frank Frangin mention a couple weeks ago. He said, well, you know, when most teams are trying to turn it around, the first thing they do is they lose by a lot. Then they lose by a little. Then they start winning by a little, then they win by a lot. So I think that's where we are. We were getting blown out. Now we're losing by a little. And so I'm encouraged. I see it turning around. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen.
Yeah, that goes back to something Dave Caldwell told us last year on Jaguars Today, Tony, during the London week. I mean, that's where that mantra comes from. Caldwell, and I forget the exact way he put it, but he actually laid it out by year, you know, that he was like, your first year, you're just trying to get on the field and put a team together, right? You're getting killed. Okay, your second year, and this is when you start over from scratch, obviously. Your second year, you're trying to be a little bit more competitive, but you probably can't play four quarters with the best teams in the league. Your third year, now you're finding yourself in these games in the fourth quarter, and you're going to win your share, you're going to lose your share. You can debate whether they've won their share or not. And whereas maybe you're a score behind entering in the fourth quarter, you feel like you can overtake these teams. Whereas in year four, you're the team leading in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. You're the team putting teams away. At least that's the progression, kind of what he saw, which kind of dovetails with what Frank is talking about.
And that's a slower progression than people want. It's probably a slower progression than you would get normally. I think we all feel like this was a little bit of a deeper rebuild, or they're coming from a deeper spot. You know, I think a big reason why we're seeing the same thing over and over again, I keep going back to pass rush. You know, it's hard to close, and it's hard to get a leg up on teams when you have trouble creating turnovers. And I think it's really hard to create turnovers consistently when you have trouble getting a pass rush without blitzing. So I don't know that we're going to see this team up by double digits in the fourth quarter very often until they improve with the four down linemen to be able to get pressure. I'm not sure that happens this season. I'm not saying they can't win, but I don't think it's a coincidence that we've seen 7 out of 8 games sort of play out where it's tight in the fourth quarter. They can't close. You know, getting pressure with four really help, or at all, really helps you create turnovers. And this team just has trouble doing it.
All right, let's get to Luke next up on the north side here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Luke. Luke.
Struggle's real.
Yeah, Luke's having issues with his phone. We appreciate the effort, nonetheless. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in here. Let's hear a couple of things from Blake Bortles after the game. First, commenting, he was asked about his fumble and the impact that had.
Just trying to buy time. You know, I had a quick protection call, so I got to get rid of the ball or take off and run or do something. I think Allen actually went on his route, you know, to the right, which was the first read. So, you know, probably just got to stay in the pocket and throw that.
That's a bad play by Blake. I mean, he's telling you right there. That's a quick protection. In other words, that's a protection design to hold these guys off knowing you're going to get rid of the ball before anybody can get there. They're not expected to hold blocks for a long, you know, seven-step right. drop, deep developing play, that kind of thing. And he said, my first read was open. And maybe that the quick protection, he didn't trust it. Mm-hmm. But he, as he said, I got to stay there. I got to make sure I deliver that ball. Look. It doesn't change the fact that he didn't do those things.
Sure.
But I mean, you can look at it any way you like, but you can also, one of the ways to look at it is to say he recognizes what he's doing wrong. You've sure. got to stop doing those wrong things at a certain point. And I think the good he's doing has been far outweighing the bad, but all it takes is a few really yeah. bad things to no doubt. Undo all the good that you've done.
Yeah, and it's why we're sitting here every Monday, well, not every Monday, but a lot of Mondays, frustrated, picking it apart. I just get a feeling that this is what we're going to be doing this year a lot, is frustrated picking it apart. But it doesn't change that I think you see the progression in him, and there is a good chance that he's going to grow through this.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot easier to destroy than it is to build. And that's why, look, he can make five good plays in a game. The one mistake is going to outweigh that, generally right. speaking. As far as the result of what's going to happen inside of a football game, five good plays doesn't overcome no. throwing that key interception, because it kills you in any chance you have to win.
I mean, he made more than five good plays, and still those key yeah, turnovers sure. undo yeah. all of that.
It's just a lot easier to tear down than it is to build up. Blake Bortles also talked about not making enough of those plays.
Yeah, you know, I think it's, I think we put up a ton of yards, did a lot of good stuff, you know, but it's the plays you missed out on that, you know, you think about at night, you know, the ones you didn't make, you know, when you know you had a chance to make it and, you know, hopefully put up more points.
I do think it bothers him, and I do think he wants to get better. That's not enough, though. I would assume most professional athletes have that
yeah.
attitude. Not all do, and we've seen that over the years, but, again, to me, and in terms of Blake, the glass is definitely, if you're choosing between half full and half empty, it's definitely half full. That doesn't make it any less disappointing
right.
or frustrating, these game-changing mistakes.
It's not, you know, I always try to look at the long term and the big picture with this team, because you're following a building process. In the short term, it certainly doesn't excuse him from criticism or, you know, blame or whatever for the loss yesterday. Because on those key plays, had he done things differently, it could have turned out differently.
Right.
So, you know, is the loss his fault? I think he would tell you. I mean, that was certainly his tone in the post game, was that he felt bad because he should have made more plays for the guys in that locker room. I mean, that was definitely I think he definitely felt that after the game. So, yeah, be mad at him, be down on him, but this is the guy.
Right. I feel like he made enough plays, enough positive plays. He just made, you know, as we said, the negative plays
sure.
took away. If he just did fewer of those, and you need to do anything more than you did with the 380. They outgained him by 150, 140 yards, whatever it
right.
was, you know. The question that Tyler tells me here that Luke wanted to ask about was simply this. Who is the best player on the Jacksonville Jaguars? How would you answer that question, Tony and John?
Right now?
Right now.
Without
the analysis, just give me a name first, and let's go around the table.
I mean, I think it pops in my mind is Allen Robinson.
Okay, yeah, Allen Robinson. Tony, who's the best player on the Jags?
First player that popped in my mind was Linder.
Was Linder. Okay, he's hurt, so let's go among the guys who are healthy.
Allen Hurns.
I agree with that. Either way, we're picking nits here.
Sure.
I think it's Allen Hurns as well. That doesn't mean he's the most important player. Blake by far is the most important player on this football team.
No.
Honestly, if you could give your choice between having both those receivers or Bortles and you could start fresh tomorrow. You take Bortles. I would every single time.
Well, it's always a quarterback.
Always a quarterback. So while
if,
he is
if
the
he
most
has
important,
a sniff of potential and you believe in it at all, it's always the quarterback.
And you're going to be judged more harshly at that position as you should be,
sure,
because you're also going to get the praise when it goes your way. If he was 6-2, people would be blowing smoke at him. Okay, you know, and he'd be they could be 6-2 with just a minor modicum of changes in some of these games. And would it make him a better player? Right. Would it make better results for the football team? That's just to illustrate, you know.
Okay, let me ask you guys this.
Okay.
Why isn't Telvin Smith on your list?
Because I think Hearn shows up week in, week out more consistently than Telvin.
I agree with
does.
That. I mean,
Telvin's a very good player. He'd be on the short list of guys.
I think Telvin's interesting. I think Telvin is going to get, as the defense gets better around him, which I believe it will with the draft and acquisitions in the offseason, I think the pass rush is going to get better next year. As the defense gets better around him, I think he will get explosively better.
I think you're probably
correct. I don't
correct.
Know that he's a guy who, on a defense that's struggling, you know, he's not stout, so he's not going to be the guy who rocks solid against the run on the strong side of the football. But if everything else is going well and he can go make plays, I haven't seen very many guys on defense who are consistently as noticeable on a defense that's not great.
I think you have potentially, just on the guys that are playing right now, keep Fowler out of it, we haven't seen him play in the NFL. I think you have a potentially great player on each level of the defense. I think by next year, a full year removed, Cedric Marks can get back to his previous level of play, which I think was a great level of play. He was outstanding last mm-hmm. year. Okay, I think Telvin and I think Aaron Colvin all have the chance to be great players.
Yeah, Colvin struggled yesterday. I think Colvin is particularly a guy, once the pass rush gets home a little more and quarterbacks are a little more frazzled against this team, I think Colvin does have a knack for the ball.
He's going to be opportunistic. I didn't.
Yeah.
You think he had a really bad game yesterday? I thought a couple of those. I thought he was in position against Decker and,
yeah.
you know,
well,
Decker
I mean,
made plays.
You know, when your receiver makes some plays as a corner after the game, you feel like he didn't play. You know,
right.
You're down. I don't think he was horrible anyway, but I don't think it was his best.
Regardless, game. I'm not basing it just on any one performance. I'm just talking about
sure.
in the sum total a year from now. I think that the potential is there for those guys. They got to, you know, they got to fulfill that potential, much like Blake needs
certainly
to fulfill
it. Certainly, both Smith and Colvin look like guys who, after their fourth year, you're going to want to get back.
All right, we got to take a time out here. We'll come back. Fan feedback spotlight today, asking folks, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, half full, half empty on the Jags. Your glass, what is it? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osier here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osier.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, here's the kind of text on the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line that makes me either A, laugh, or question someone's intelligence.
Or weep.
No, I don't weep about it. That's their issue if they don't like it. I guess I'm assuming based on my comments saying I think the Jags have some potential stars on the defense for the future. This person texts, the selling of next year's season tickets has begun on this program. Buddy, you don't want to buy season tickets? Don't buy them. I could care less. Not my job. I don't sell tickets. I don't work for the Jaguars, all right? If you think there is nothing good about this football team and none of these players are ever potentially be any good, why do you even listen? Why do you consider yourself a Jaguar fan? Why would you listen to this program? I don't get it. We're going to talk about the good and the bad. You don't think I mean, it's honestly, it's beyond me that you think that I'm going to come in here. Maybe you've never heard me before on the radio, but you think I'm just going to come in here and go, man, we got to whitewash this one, guys. What are we going to do? What's
the plan here? There's your outline. I see your outline
here, next to John. It's sell how many tickets? Tony, did you check with the ticket office? Did we get any calls on the break?
A frowny face.
Oh, it's still
is
a
this
frowny
the apology
face.
Segment? Is where I apologize for everything?
I think so.
All right, let's go.
Well,
let's
you're an apologist for the Jags, so start apologizing. I mean,
I'm sorry.
It's so ridiculous. if you're the kind of person that doesn't think that Telvin Smith or Aaron Colvin or Cedric Marks is nothing at all to get excited about this team, truly, why would you listen to this program? Why? Why would you follow this team at all? Why would you even consider buying a ticket? I could give a rip if you buy a ticket. There are plenty of other people that want your tickets, okay?
His head's almost as mad as his shirt right now.
Honestly. I mean, I just...
They're matching red.
They're mad on a Monday.
It's
their
not
team
mad.
Is 2-6.
I like this. This invigorates me. People's blatant stupidity makes me feel better about myself. I'm glad I'm not you. So I'm thanking you for this text that shows me how dumb... potentially people can be, okay? And that I'm not there. And that makes me feel good about myself because it does. I'm one of those people that feels good with the misfortune of others, Tony. We've established that
long
ago.
Oh, I know
that. So I'm sorry that someone dropped you on your head as a child, perhaps. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe you're just naturally not that smart. Maybe your parents weren't that smart, and therefore you inherited some dumb DNA. I don't know.
True pessimist.
Right.
Well, what do you need right now?
I don't know.
You know what you need right now?
What do I need?
Dandy sub.
You know what? There you go. I will sell you a dandy sub now because they do deliver for you. All right? All right. Let's get to the fan feedback question today. Half full, half empty, Tony. Don't you dare say half full on any of these people or we'll be accused of making up these tweets to try to sell tickets. So please do tell me all the negativity you can muster, please.
From Irish Jaguar, glass half full of Bortles, Allens, and Telvins. Oh, he mentioned Telvin. That guy's not going to be happy about that. The Dodge of Duval. Why is the glass at half? Realist, the Jaguars are just all around bad. From Eric, it's half full, barely. I have to keep reminding myself that it's mostly second year guys still. From Colby, half full because of the offense, the Allens and Bortles and Yeldon. From Daniel, glass half full, the Allens, Yeldon, Telvin and Bortles are all reasons why. From Cristiano, half full, lots of signs of progress. From John, half full, of offense moving the ball and a D that's stopping the run. Hashtag all I want for Christmas is a pass rush. And from Demetrius, I'm already looking ahead to the 2016 draft in November. Again, that should explain my view of this season. Hashtag Joey Bosa.
All right, we got a couple of good ones on the Facebook page here. The glass is from Adrian. The glass is clearly half full. We have probably the most promising young wide receiver core in the league, and Blake is promising and improving. A promising and improving young quarterback who can only get... Wait, Blake has dropped the glass. The glass is on the ground. The other team has recovered the glass and is returning it to the 50, the 20, the 10. Touchdown, other team, and now the glass is empty again.
Let's just close with that.
That's pretty clever. Well done, Adrian. And you know what? He's probably had a T-shirt before. He'll get another one out of that one today. And there are plenty of other submissions. Let's get a couple of calls in before we close up shop today. John, let's go to Dan in Fleming Island. Next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, good morning, guys. This is maybe an oversimplistic question, but it just seems to me we need to have like a hot receiver, you know, like Yeldon or Robinson coming out of the backfield on the blitzes, and maybe we do, and I'm not catching it, but I'd like to have that guy that we can dump the ball off when these blitzes come, because to me it normally will slow down the blitzes later on.
I don't think it's a dumb question. It's tough for me to go back and visualize every play in which he got sacked, and because some of them aren't quick developing sacks.
It seemed, I'm with you. It seemed like that was what they did on the first swing pass to Yeldon early, that worked for about 20 yards in the first quarter.
Yeah,
he sort of dumped it off to his right.
Right.
You know, do you do that at the expense of not having that guy in the block? That's the question at that point.
Right, or sometimes, there are different ways to do it.
I do get a lot of questions about why no screens, and they don't run it very often, which I think is curious.
Right, although every time they run a screen and that doesn't work, you're going to get that question as well. All right, look, when everything doesn't work, play calling always gets questioned, and I do get it. In this case, I can't. This would be more of a log. Somebody who's watched the film on these instances and maybe looking for that. Is there a guy there? Is Blake not seeing him? Is it taking too long for the play to develop? Is he trying to, is the play call to try to drive the ball downfield? And thus, by the time your outlet's there, maybe you're being moved out of your spot. There are a lot of reasons why that may be. I'm not sure what they are.
Or maybe the hot route guy is Julius Thomas and he doesn't get open. Like, we don't know in that case if they say, look, Yeldon's staying in the block to pick up this blitz. That's an adjustment that the quarterback may make before the play starts. We don't know. We talked about it last week, though. More concerning for me is the completion percentage for Blake Bortles, and I'd like to see the valve, the safety valve, be used more in this offense so that his completion numbers can go up, and they are facing more third and four as opposed to third and seven, third and eight on some of these drives.
It was slightly better this week, 60%.
Yeah.
Right, 24 out of 40. Let's get one more in before we wrap it up here today, and that would be Scott on the south side. Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I love you guys. You guys got a great show. Oh, no. But anyway, my question is...
Scott's just trying to get me to not accuse him of being dropped on his head as a child. That's all.
Nah, that's not fair. My question is, how about if we go from the offense to the defense, and if we get one of those three third and sevens or the one third and 14th and get them off the field, does that change the game?
Sure, it could, but I'm looking at the numbers because I saw you called in and wanted to talk about third down conversions. Jets were 5 of 15 on third down. Now, they also converted the fourth down, which they wouldn't have gone for if their kicker was healthy. So the fact that Folk hurt himself actually worked against the Jags in that particular instance.
Look, there's been lots of games this season where the defense hasn't held up. For the most part, I didn't think yesterday was one of those games.
I have a hard time pointing at the defense on this one as well.
When you do the job, you get Chris Ivory.
And, I mean, look, you outgained them overall. Like, what was the total final total? 430? I keep forgetting what the Jags' total was. It was 290 to 436.
Yeah, 51, 52-yard drive in the first half, 30-yard drive, and then what was the last one, 25?
Yeah.
So they gave up. They really gave up one drive, which was sort of based on that one play to the tight end.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to take away. Yeah, you could have stopped him for field goals in those situations.
Certainly room for improvement.
But
this was not
the game to point at the defense and say, "Oh my goodness, what an awful performance." I mean,
this was not that game. Hey, look, you could point, and that's the thing.
They had those.
Sure, they have. Look at the Tampa game, right? I mean, you could point to special teams, returns are still a problem. You can point to a lot of things. You can point to the turnovers.
4-0 turnover ratio.
I mean,
that's
the main number
one. Put an envelope and send it away.
Kinds of areas that maybe had they been good or better in certain areas, they would have got a different result. But overall, I mean, if you're grading the defense yesterday, I'm going to give them pretty high marks despite the 28 points.
The third and 12, the longest third down they gave up was on like the first drive of the game for the Jets. I mean, they shut it down after that. By my count, the Jaguars defense was 6 of 8 getting them off the field on third and seven or longer in that football game yesterday. That's fine. Like, that's what you expect an NFL defense to be, and in fact, that may be above the average number.
And, oh, by the way, they created a lot of those third and longs yesterday because they did such a good job on the early downs yesterday. And again, some people are going to hear this and go, you're just trying to whitewash the fact that they're 2-6 and Gus Bradley is whatever he is.
With this pass rush, that's about as well as this defense can play.
I thought they played very well.
If you get them into those third and eight, third and nine situations, that's what the defense is designed to do.
Maybe they give up 14 points yesterday.
Right. Maybe, 17, 20-ish. So,
It doesn't mean they can't be better in those situations. It's always frustrating when a team converts third and seven or third and 10 or whatever the case may be. But as a whole, defense more likely to get a game ball from me than the finger of criticism pointed their way.
If you're expecting the defense to play a whole lot better than that, a pass rush ain't walking in the door this year.
All right. You do not have to call in and say you love the show. Just don't accuse me of trying to be a shill to sell tickets because that is incorrect, sir. And
By the way, I'll take two.
Yes. Okay. Well, Tony, you got those over there? We'll work this out on the break coming up. All right. Let's get down the hall and get this sorted out. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. They'll meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA guaranteed. And you can even trade your gold for guns, as John well knows, at Wild West. Guns4Jax.com. Guns4Jax.com is the website. Or better yet, stop by and see them at South Wayne Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for our Monday spot. Sponsor of Jaguars today, Wild West Guns and Gold. That'll do it for us. What do you have coming up today?
Get Jaguars.com live at 12:45, leading into Gus Bradley's press conference at 1 o'clock.
Beauty. And read all about it at Jaguars.com with the senior writer, John Osier. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, thanks to all of you out there in listener land as well and all of our great sponsors. I'm Mike Dempsey signing off for Jaguars Today. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo! That's great job!